Hard Feelings by Mark Coggins is a bang bang thrill ride, says best-selling author Seth Harwood, who adds that the lead character of Winnie is a female Jack Reacher. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 17. Winnie. Winnie drove back with Reardon to their hotel in Reno to pick up their luggage. They decided that they needed to put more mileage between themselves and the bridal bit before dark, but Reardon insisted on stopping at a drugstore to pick up bandages and disinfectant for her leg. By the time he finished swathing her calf with Neosporin, gauze, and tape in the parking lot of a Walgreens, she looked like she was ready for burial in an Egyptian sarcophagus. "You know the first line of the Hippocratic Oath?" she asked, as he knelt on the asphalt by the passenger door of the Lincoln. "Something about collecting the copay?" "No, something about not doing any harm. Are you sure you didn't cut off the circulation?"
"If your foot turns blue, we'll know."
He stood and looked down at her. "Seriously, this should help with the infection and bleeding, but it looks like you took some buckshot. We should see a doctor and have them removed."
"That goes back to the do no harm thing. If you get hit by some buckshot, it's better to let them come to the surface as the wound heals rather than trying to dig them out. And there's no way I'm going to the hospital with a gunshot wound. Those have to be reported. Even if we didn't draw the attention of the winemaker's men, we'd certainly have the Sparks or the Reno cops breathing down our necks."
Reardon sighed. "You always have a comeback, don't you? If you won't see a doctor, you're still going to have another consultation with me. We need to do a better job of cleaning the wounds than I can do in a frigging parking lot." He tromped to the other side of the car, and after flinging the medical supplies in the back, dropped into the driver's seat to start the motor. He paused then, his hand poised over the gear selector, and turned to look at her.
"Waiting for a pat on the head?"
Winnie asked.
"Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it."
Reardon harumped and drove off. They crossed into California and covered another 60 miles or so along Highway 20 until they came to the tiny gold country town of Nevada City. It was nearly 8 p.m. They were both tired and hungry and ready to stop for the night. Making good on that decision was another matter altogether. It was high season in Nevada City, and the town's few hotels and motels were full of bratty kids and their parents looking to fish, hike, or pan for gold. It was only after the clerk of another motel directed them to a dump called the Prospector Inn that they were able to find rooms. They weren't even rooms exactly. They were cottages set around a tract of land that the hotel brochure referred to as a park. The only place Winnie could think of where weeds, dead pine trees, and skids of bare red earth would qualify as a park was Chernobyl. The cottages themselves were just as bad, filthy, ramshackle, and decorated with furnishings that looked like they'd been purchased at a yard sale. She'd seen ice fishing shacks that were more livable. After unloading the luggage, they sat down at the scratched dinette table in her cottage to feast on the half-vegetarian, half-pepperoni pizza they'd picked up in town. A chandelier with missing globes dangled above them. Whether it was the depressing surroundings, the crappy food, or the tragic ending to their assault on the brothel, conversation was at a minimum. Winnie found herself wondering whether she should even go on, or whether she should continue to drag Reardon with her. She knew that he wasn't comfortable with her aggressive tactics and that the death of Starlet and the Johns at Destiny's hand had upset him.
"Maybe we should split up," she said abruptly. "We've found where the winemaker's holding up. That's the most important thing. There's no need for you to come with me to Healdsburg. Maybe you should. Cut and run? Reardon chugged the last of his beer and set the bottle aside. Look, I know you are a death-dealing bitch on wheels, but there's no way you or anyone else is going to take the winemaker down by yourself.
The odds don't improve much with the two of us.
Yes, they do. They aren't good odds, but they're certainly better odds. You've saved my bacon several times now, and whether you admit it or not, I've helped you through my association with Ray, with my clever,
cockamamie,
stratagems, and the simple and rather startling fact that, at times, I'm more prudent than you.
Prudent, like when you nearly choked yourself to death on the bench press?
I said, at times. She smiled in spite of herself.
Okay, I'm not going to say you complete me, but we've made an okay team. Still, it's not really your fight. If you leave now and do a good job of keeping your head down, I doubt the winemaker would bother to chase you. It's me and my hardware he's after.
Reardon took another bud from the six-pack. He twisted off the cap and held it up by his ear to snap it across the room. It whizzed through the bathroom door where it clattered into the sink.
2 points, he said. But I digress. That's bullshit. It has always been my fight, as you said yourself when you came to the Springs.
The winemaker has killed everyone who crossed him. He won't exempt me no matter how far I run. And that's just looking at it from his side. From my side, there's no way I'm calling it quits now. Not after seeing what he did to the women at the brothel, and what he caused them to do to others, and not after...
Winnie waited a moment, then prompted, "And not after what?"
Reardon took a hurried swallow of beer and bought more time by wiping his mouth with the back of his hand. "Not after all I've invested in you."
"Invested in me? What am I, some kind of mutual fund?"
Reardon flashed a grin. "What you are, exactly, is a longer discussion, but there are two things about you that I've been trying to figure out how to tell you since we stopped at the Pizza Hut.
Namely,
one is you've got dried blood in your hair, on the left side, just above your ear. I don't think it's yours."
"All right. A little icky, perhaps, but pretty low on the ickiness scale when you consider all we've been through today. What's the other?"
"You've also got dried blood on your butt. It's yours. You were also shot in the ass." Winnie understood why Reardon had mentioned the Pizza Hut. She'd gone to the bathroom there, and he had expected her to see the blood on her underwear when she pulled down her pants. She also might have seen the blood on her hair in the restroom mirror. She hadn't noticed either because the toilet was so dirty that she'd been more concerned about hovering over it to avoid contact, and the light over the mirror was busted. Then it dawned on her that he must have spotted the blood much earlier, certainly by the time they stopped at the Walgreens. That was why he was so keen on getting her to see a doctor, and that was why he'd lingered before driving off. Without someone else's help, he knew he would have to treat the wound, and he didn't want to be the one to tell her. She looked over at him and felt her face go flushed.
"Now you know how I felt about dropping trow at the bridal bit," he said. "I'll patch it up. I don't need your help."
"The hell you don't. You'd have to use a mirror, and you don't have the motor skills or the patience. Go to the bedroom and close the door. Ditch your pants and underwear and lie in the bed on your stomach. Holler when you're ready. Unless you have an embarrassing tattoo, I won't see anything that exciting."
"My ass is pretty damn exciting.
With the blood and the buckshot, I'm sure I can hold myself in check."
"I'm not finished with dinner."
"You already ate your measly 2 slices, and there aren't any mushrooms or peppers left to scavenge from the others. Go."
Winnie stood and kicked the chair back. She strode into the bedroom and slammed the door shut.
She pulled off her shoes and socks, then slipped out of her track pants. Reardon was right. There was a small hole in the left side 2 inches or so below the waist that was crusted with dried blood. She walked over to the bed and considered it. The bed was sway-backed and lumpy. The mustard-colored spread was dusted with a white powder she hoped had nothing to do with fleas or bedbugs.
She peeled it back to reveal graying sheets with several obvious mends. She sighed, hooked her thumbs in the waistband of her panties, and shimmied out of them. Holding them to the light, she examined the small Rorschach of blood, then kicked them under the bed. She put a knee to the mattress, then thought better of it. Instead, she went to the luggage she'd left by the dresser, found her purse, and extracted a makeup compact. "Okay," she called out when she was at last positioned diagonally atop the bed, feeling as vulnerable as a shucked oyster. Reardon entered the room carrying a large bag of stuff from the drugstore, trying his damnedest to look serious, but not pulling it off. Propped on her elbows, Winnie watched as his eyes zeroed in on her backside. She expected a leer or a grin. He surprised her by grimacing. "That looks way worse than your calf," he said. Her butt was the one thing she hadn't inspected before calling him into the room. She flipped open the compact and used its mirror to look now. He was right. There was a mottled ring of bruising and discoloration. The wound did look a tiny bit worse than the one on her calf. "But I'd totally hit it otherwise," Reardon assured her. "Talk about two creamy scoops of vanilla ass cheeks." "Shut the fuck up," Winnie snapped. "Should I have said rock hard instead of creamy? I could definitely get behind rock hard." "I don't want you to get behind any goddamn thing. Just hurry up with the doctoring." Reardon laughed. "I'll be right with you. I need to wash up." When he returned from the bathroom, he spread a hand towel beside her with a variety of first aid supplies arrayed across the top. Gauze, cotton balls that smelled like they'd been doused with alcohol, tape, a tube of Neosporin, and a pair of tweezers. She was pleased that at least the hotel's towels looked clean, but she wasn't so pleased about the tweezers. "We already talked about this," she said. "You're not going on a fishing expedition for buckshot." He knelt on the bed beside her and began rubbing around the wound with a damp washcloth. "We're not talking fishing here," he said. "I can see one right near the surface. No doubt it bounced off your rock-hard gluteus maximus." "Right." She held the mirror over her shoulder to monitor what he was doing. "You don't need to be so dainty about it." "You really can't feel anything?" "No, I really can't. But don't get any ideas about doing a reach around. I'm watching." "In your rear view mirror, that is." "Oh, please." He scrubbed more vigorously with a washcloth, but he surprised her with the careful, almost fastidious way he approached the task. She wouldn't have thought it in his repertoire. When he was finished, Reardon picked up the tweezers and an alcohol-sodden cotton ball and thoroughly scrubbed the tips. "I did this in the bathroom already," he said, "but just to be sure." She nodded. "I'm glad you're disinfecting them, but you only get one go. No digging around in there." "Yes, boss." He reached down to pinch the sides of the wound and then brought the tweezers in for the kill. Now even she could see the shot in the mirror, and he didn't have any trouble plucking it out. He dabbed at an ooze of blood with a dry cotton ball and applied a generous layer of Neosporin. He finished with a laminate of fresh cotton, gauze, and tape, making a surprisingly neat job of it. "That's the only way I'll ever get to pinch your ass," he said. "You got that right. Are you done?" "Almost. I want to change the bandage on your calf." "Do I have to be naked from the waist down for that?" "No. Feel free to get up and pull your pants on." "Bastard." He made quick work of it, but rather than leaving the room to let her dress as she wanted, he returned to the bathroom and brought out a bath towel. "Wrap that around your waist and strip down to your bra. I'm going to wash your hair."
"The hell you are. I'm perfectly capable of washing my own hair."
"I know, but this will be nicer. Like a massage." She used to have Ted wash her hair. It was like a massage. The only sort of massage she could ever feel. She shook her head.
"It's a nice thought," she said, her voice softening. "But it'd be too awkward. We can't use the sink, and I'd have to get down on all fours to use the bathtub faucet."
"No, you don't. I got one of those sink rinser hosers at the drugstore.
I've already attached it to the faucet.
Jesus, you've been planning this since before we left Reno. You knew about my butt before we left Reno, too, didn't you?
He dipped his head, embarrassed. I didn't know how to tell you. When you wouldn't agree to see a doctor, I thought for sure you'd...
Yeah, figure it out on my own. Okay, if you're man enough to play ladies' hairdresser, I'm woman enough to let you do it. Wash my hair.
Reardon grabbed one of the stickback chairs from the dinette table while she wrapped the towel around her waist and stripped down to her bulky sports bra. At least, she thought, it wasn't some skimpy black lace number. He got her situated in the chair near the sink, draped another towel around her neck, and leaned her back over the basin. "How's the water temperature?" he asked.
"Oh, God, it's wonderful."
For the first time in months, Winnie let herself relax. She closed her eyes. She thought back to the times Ted would wash her hair while they stood in the shower of their designer bathroom. She was so far away from that now. But Reardon's touch felt as good or better, massaging her scalp through the shampoo, kneading the muscles in her neck. A sudden constriction of emotion, loss and loneliness, tightened her throat. Moisture welled in her eyes.
"Stay with me tonight,"
she heard herself whisper.
You have been listening to No Hard Feelings, a finalist for the Forward Reviews Book of the Year Award. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.